All right, welcome everyone to the March 8th Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting. Before we proceed, I'll read off some of our procedures for tonight's meeting. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public, comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone. When I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raised hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified once your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda you wish to speak on, dial star 9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it's your turn to speak, dial star 6 to unmute. Now, to remind the public that is in attendance, that there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return them to King to help expedite public comments. The procedure for the next meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I'll ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. And then the committee comes to a consensus to move an item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoints shown on tonight's meeting will be posted to SCV Water website. With the new improved website, I highly recommend the public to check it out. All right, at this point, all committee members are present, and we will move on to item one, Pledge of Allegiance. And I'll ask Director Marks to carry us to the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready to begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Judge Martin. We move on to item number two, public comments. Are there any comments from the public?
No.
Yes. All right, in that case, move on to item 3.1, recommend authorizing the general manager to enter into an agreement for the coordinated deliveries of state water project water supply between United and SCV Water, and this will be presented by Ali Alsan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good evening, and this is a topic that I think have came to this committee many times, I think, over the last year or so. And I'm just going to continue providing some information about this agreement. The staff is seeking authorization to enter into an agreement to coordinate deliveries of state water projects, specifically Article 21 and any other excess water that's available between United Water Conservation District and SCV Water for purposes of recharging water into the upper Santa Clara River Basin, groundwater basin, and the Piru groundwater basin. This agreement is show a clear desire between the two agencies to advance regional collaboration to manage regional resources as we share all of us some of these resources together. The agreement is providing coordinated ordering of Article 21 and other state water project water supplies that's available for the beneficiary use of that water to recharge our aquifer. Building on this, this agreement is really building on a cooperative agreement that has been done in the short term in the past. There was a similar two-year pilot program agreement that was not used, but the agreement was in place, but there was no water to be used at that time. But we have that agreement. We have the spirit of collaboration with United and would like to continue that. The the objective of this agreement is clearly is to coordinate these deliveries of the Article 21 and other water supplies into Castaic Creek for enhancing natural groundwater recharge. The way that if water is available at sufficient flow, that's it will be anticipated that both agencies will place water orders with DWR so that and it's going to be divided in a way that's approximately at this point. That's the initial ratio that we have in the agreement. That 75% of that water is going to go to United. 25% is going to benefit us, and we're going to be responsible for paying for 25% of the release. They are responsible for 75% of the release. This agreement is a living document. And the relationship is a living relationship. We'll continue monitor, and I think this is will give us a good opportunity in understanding more how much recharge is happening at the our side of the basin versus their side of the basin. So there is a monitoring measurement of flows and measurement of groundwater in as part of this agreement that will allow both agencies to continue monitoring the flows. And also to continue improving this agreement if we find something, if we learn something in the field, it will help us, both the staffs in the two agencies to improve upon the agreement. The agreement as it is, it meets several of our strategic initiatives and a strategic plan nexus. It has a set, very strong connection to what we have as an agency as goals and the strategic strategies to meet our vision and mission in this organization. And we listed that in the memo attached to your packet. With that, I would like that the committee, the Water Resources and Watershed Committee, recommends to the board of directors to authorize the general manager to enter into an agreement with United Water Conservation District to coordinate deliveries of state water project water supplies. Just a note, this item went into the Finance Committee for United last week, and it went yesterday to their board for approval. So they are already in the process of approving this agreement. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll stay for any questions.
Okay, before we move to the committee, are there any questions from the public? Attendance, any virtual questions?
There is none.
All right. Any directors, any questions, comments?
Do we know what action United's board took? Did they adopt?
I don't know about that. I didn't see it in their website. I was checking their website actually today, but there is nothing yet in their website. There is no update for the website at this point. But the Finance Committee actually recommended to the board.
It was a unanimous approval from the Finance Committee, is that right?
That went to the board, yes.
Do you speak with the general manager on a regular basis from United? Have you been introduced to him?
Our assistant general manager speaks to the general
manager. Yes. I speak with Mr. Gordon quite a bit. Yeah, usually a lot of it revolves around conference time, and we make a point to make sure that we sit down and have a chat and talk. I think, you know, what we're doing currently, Chair Ozdowski, is the staffs are meeting on a monthly basis. So okay. We have a scheduled meeting. So kind of Mauricio's assistant GM, Tony Emmerich, and myself, Ali, a couple of their other staff members, our other staff members meet monthly, and we just chat about different things. We've been talking a lot about this agreement for the last several rounds, just making sure that we're comfortable and moving that forward. But we take the opportunity to talk about a bunch of different things in those meetings, kind of how their operations are going, how ours are going.
Okay.
You know, different kind of regulatory issues.
Just want to see if there's a working relationship.
No.
Okay.
I can answer that. Yes.
Yes. Excellent. Last question on page 5 of the board packet, page 3 on the agreement, as an example, and also on the next page, 4 and 6 in the packet, the total flow to United, total flow to Santa Cruz. Have those numbers been vetted by your team?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
We looked into those and we vetted this membership.
Do you believe that this should go on a consent calendar?
No, it's not so much of a question. It's just a comment that this is the kind of collaborative approach that we anticipated or contemplated during the formation of SCV Water. And I'm really happy to see us moving forward with this. United's been a good partner, and I think it's a really positive step for both agencies. So I'm certainly supportive. Whether it goes to consent or not, it might be something that the full board would like to see a presentation on, but I'll leave that to the rest of the committee.
Directors?
Yeah, I am very happy with this, putting this back together again. It's been to the board before. I guess I didn't remember that they had 20,000 acre feet of storage plus another 5,000 of Ventura water that's there as well, which gives us another 5,000 acre feet if it goes into the ground. So I think that's helpful.
Yeah. I think one of the provisions that are in this agreement really can form the basis of us operating the lower and the upper basin in a more unified manner. One of the provisions here looks for a 5-year kind of look in and true up, which will facilitate a discussion about, but when we spread water in our basin, how much of it is retained and used by us? How much of it is going down into the lower basin? And what adjustments need to be made? I think that as we gain experience with this limited step, I think that they could lay the foundation of really a much more elaborative operation of our and their state water project assets, if indeed some of their water came into our basin. The idea that, recognizing that it's going to end up in their basin, that might be something that we could collaborate on in the future to benefit both our agencies.
It's my understanding that the monitoring will be the cost of monitoring will be shared 50-50, right? With United? That's correct. And the amounts will be measured via the two wells that were shown in figure two.
Yeah, most of it has to do with surface monitoring. So there's a few key spots along the channel that will actually take field measurements of the flow of the channel. That will indicate kind of how much water is flowing on the surface. The groundwater level measurements will give us an idea of how much is going subsurface, but it's really the surface flow that is going to tell us how much of, we release at point A, how much is it making it to point C? And so we'll have those reference points to compare and associate with the benefit.
When do you think that data will become available to us?
The agreement talks about a report that will be produced. So it talks about kind of a monthly report. But I think there's a couple things going on right now that, one, we're releasing water now with United. It has nothing to do with this agreement. It has to do with a different agreement, which is recognized in here, but it's called the flood flow agreement. So it's basically the native flows that the rain has provided to the reservoir. Those have to be evacuated by May 1st. Mm-hmm. And so that water is being released, and we are working with them to go out in the field and take measurements, kind of as if it was this type of release. So to just get familiar with where you can take measurements, how you take the measurements, and learning from that experience.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, we are we were planning to use the current release that's happening from the native flows now to kind of practice this monitoring protocol that we have in this agreement. This is a long-term agreement. We are trying to see how it works in reality, both our staff and their staff, and actually Five Point staff, because they have an interest in this also. So the three entities are planning to have a field trip, and I'm going to talk about that later in my report, in the near future, hopefully, to just do a flow measurements and know where are those locations, introducing our staff to their field staff also to do that.
Will you be physically walking the creek, or is it more like aerial topography to find out the best place to put your sensors?
They are planning to use a device called the Doppler, which is that they float it over the top of the stream flow, and it's using the sound sounds and of sending sounds to measure the flow and velocity of the river across the river and give you the information. I think that's because right now the flows are really high. It's they don't want to send someone with a 400 CFS. They are sending 400 CFS right now down the river, down the creek. So they are saying they wanted to use this Doppler, it's a technique that's used by USGS and introduced by USGS. So it's something that a lot of the agencies are using.
Okay. Well, directors, for transparency's sake, do you believe this should be on consent or presented to the board?
Of course, I'm concerned it can go on consent. It's really simple. It's just redoing the agreement that we've had in the past. So.
Okay. And I take it the team is seeking a consent. Okay.
Well. And they're releasing 400 right now?
Yes, that's what they told. That's what they told us in the last.
It's pretty good. Pretty good amount. Yeah,
that's a lot of lockdown. That's take.
Yeah, that's the first time we've done flood flows in a long, long time.
Do you have any images of that? Has anyone gone out and took pictures?
They didn't share images. We had a meeting with them to update us on the status of the flow of the relief about a week ago or 10 days ago. They didn't share any images yet, but they. We plan when we go out there, we take a lot of images. Actually, other staff from the agency, not only the water supply, the water resources are going with us so that we have GIS people interested in this and operation people are interested in this so that they want. And we definitely will take some pictures to share with
you. Okay, so if it's not any trouble at the next meeting, can you show those images to us?
Sure.
Okay, so let's move on this on to consent.
Just for the committee's recognition, Sue's going to go on the next board meeting, so not skipping one, but I'm going to go ahead and give it on this next one. The idea was in case there was the ability to do something with release water this year, but with the native flows, that's just not going to happen. It'd be throwing good water on top of good water, and it would end up in the ocean.
But flood flows accumulate. You don't have to have those done by May 1st.
No, those do.
They have.
Yeah. So the agreement with DWR there's been several versions of those as you work through history. Some of the early ones didn't allow for any capture of storage of the water. It was basically water coming in, water going out. Native flows, right? To replicate what would happen in a native position. In a subsequent one of the flood flow agreements, there was the capability to store them, but it's very specific in how it's done. And they will only store up to May 1st. And if it goes over, DWR kind of just says, okay, that water's ours at that point.
Well, it's like Article 21, you don't use it by.
There's been one example in history, I think, where they were having trouble with some of their facilities and actually being able to release the amount of water that they were supposed to. And so there was a little agreement done that kind of recognized that fact and let some extra storage happen and was released later. But the terms of the agreement say that it should be out by May 1st.
No, might not be a bad
idea though to approach TWR since we have some special circumstances for having been drawn down because of the repairs. They might be open to letting that water accumulate there since it would not otherwise interfere with their operation of the reservoir.
Mm-hmm. We'll ask.
Yeah,
good idea. Thanks,
Gary. All right, let's move to item number 4, discussion of staffing considerations presented by Mr. Coleman.
Yes, thank you, Chair Orzechowski. I think a couple of you got a preview of kind of the format of this at engineering committee the other night on staffing requests and how the different committees are going through. And as we work our way up to budgeting season, we thought collectively, the executive management team thought it'd be a good idea to run through kind of the various staffing requests of the different departments at the committees. And so that's what this presentation is meant to do. It's pretty high level. We'll get through it, I think, fairly quickly. So let's hop right in. Next slide, Uni. Maybe. I'll take a moment. This was a collaboration, obviously, of our department with Ali and Matt Dickens and myself. This is just a reflection, you know, so you guys can remember what our department looks like. I call it, you know, it's small but mighty. We've got a lot of things going on in our group with not many people, really, when you break it down. We'll be focusing on kind of the top and right-hand side of the org chart here. The communication side will be handled at the Public Outreach and Legislative Committee. So the water teachers and Kathy's staff and things we'll do over there. But for tonight, you can kind of get an idea of the structure of the overall department. And let's go ahead and just jump straight into the next slide, Uni. So one of the areas that we're looking to kind of shore up for our department is an administrative technician position. So for the agency, this is kind of basically the administrative class that assists others in getting their work done and organizing and scheduling things for us, helping us with budgeting and making sure we're tracking budgeting and contracts and kind of all the administrative duties in the department. And this really, as I put in the staff report, this really grew out of a couple things over the last few years. One is the assumption of the Groundwater Sustainability Agency and those duties. Those of you that are involved in the GSA, you know, you see the end product of that. But as an agency, we did not add any staff when we took on those responsibilities, and they're substantial. Right now, we do a lot of management, obviously, through contractual relationships, but that takes quite a bit of staff time and administrative time. And then you also see Ms. Kang hurting the board members and the administration that goes on with that. There's a lot of making sure everybody shows up on the right time and that the packets are right and all those things. And so Ms. Kang is taking on those duties. So in addition to that, the position that is was historically filled by Ms. Fowler was an administrative position originally, and she has been transitioned, as you guys are well aware, into aggressively pursuing grant funding. And that's the position really that we're feeling, you know, the need to backfill as she has taken on those duties and does not have, you know, the time basically to do the other things that she was doing for the department. So that's the, you know, the main need. I think we've communicated on, we would like to continue investing in pursuing grant funding because it has been extremely rewarding for the agency over the last couple of years. We're right around the 20 million mark in grants received. That is the kind of the reasoning behind this position. The position will service the entire department. So it would service Ali's group, Matt Dickens' group, as well as Kathy's group. So it's going to be a position that kind of roams over all of those things. Next slide, Uni. The next area that we're looking and feeling that we need to have some additional staff resources in is what we're calling a water resource specialist class. We've toyed around with a bunch of different names of what this could be. And I think what we're going to do, and you'll see that the senior water resource specialist is scheduled for the middle of fiscal year 23. So what we're trying to do is give ourselves some time to build a new class for this activity. And it's really, this class is focused around, I'll say, science, kind of the technical aspects, as we have listed here, things like hydrology, hydrogeology, aquatic biology, environmental science. So, you know, as an agency, the legacy agencies never really delved into this. The Cascade Lake Water Agency was kind of focused on importation of supplies and kind of the bigger picture water resources things. The retailers really didn't have the breadth of knowledge to get involved in these things. And as we took on Sigma, and as we formed the new agency, and one of our main focuses was watershed, you have to own that. And to own that, you need experts that are available to do that. And so you need people out there understanding measurement of, you know, the river system and how that works, you know, and how the environment is reacting to groundwater and surface water interaction and those types of things. I think what we're looking to focus on straight out of the gate in this position is hydrogeology and hydrology. So modeling, somebody that has modeling skills. We do not have that capability currently in the organization. And so we do a lot of work through consultants right now. This position, and that's why we framed it as a senior to start with, because we want somebody that can have the capabilities, the professional skills to be able to do this type of thing. And so that's going to be our focus, assuming, you know, the committee agrees and we go through the board, that we're going to focus on trying to recruit somebody that has that type of skill set. We've added a second position for a water resource specialist in the next fiscal year. So that'd be, you know, not this immediate next one, but the one after. And the focus there, I think you're going to see us try and focus more on the biological aspects, getting somebody with that type of skill set. Those of you that were at the GSA meeting the other night, you saw firsthand what biology is going to hit us with as an agency going forward. And so we're really trying to have the skill set to do those as well. Next, and both these positions would be fall under Ali's group in kind of rounding out that skill set there. Next slide. Water conservation specialist. So this is in Matt's group. As I mentioned, you know, he's got kind of a mighty but powerful group. He's, you know, it's Matt and three other employees. And the real challenge in this department is the future of the legislative mandates that are coming at us. They are substantial. We're going to be held to a much stricter water conservation standard as an agency. We don't fully know what that rule book looks like yet. We know what kind of the framework of it is, but developing how we're going to, as an agency, comply with those mandates is still being worked through. It's a live question. We framed this starting at the beginning of this next fiscal year, but we framed it as a limited term duration employee. And the logic behind that is we're going to be doing a update of our water conservation strategic plan this next year. This individual will help, you know, in that with the others. And probably you'll see this individual take on some of the responsibility of the others, so it frees them up to really get engaged. But it's really that strategic plan that's going to lay out how we envision doing what we need to do for the future. So rather than ask for a bunch of employees right now, we're wanting to ask for a limited term duration employee, and then we'll gauge what that strategic plan kind of lays out for us for the future and what kind of requirements are coming. I don't doubt that the future is going to look like we need to invest more in water conservation to achieve the targets. So with that, next slide. So the recommendation tonight is just, this is informational, you know, it's no specific action, but just to receive input from the committee. The idea, as it was expressed in the engineering committee as well, is that we'll roll these staffing requests up into the budget, and that's really where the kind of meat and potatoes happen of the cost impacts of these additional staff and how they fit in the overall organization. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Any questions from the public in attendance? Any virtual questions?
There's none.
Any directors, comments, questions?
Thank you, Steve, for the presentation. You know, as I walk through these various positions, I notice when we talked about the interest in pursuing grants, of course, that's what we want to do, but you didn't mention the level of effort required for grant administration. That's a significant load. And the more grants we receive, the more grant administration that, and I can see where that is really a heavy load moving forward, and certainly want to focus on grant acquisition and administration. So that's certainly understandable. As far as the hydrogeologist position, I think it's critically important to have an in-house capability in that regard. And I'm kind of surprised we don't. I guess I should know that we don't, but an agency like ours should have that capability. Do you anticipate this will do one of two things? It will either allow us to manage our consultants better, or perhaps to reduce our demand on consultant services if we can do modeling in-house and make adjustments and make changes as we go. And certainly, I foresee if we get someone that's really capable in that area, it's going to benefit the whole department. So I understand that one. I support that one. And, you know, the additional administrative help that we need when we have support the GSA function into the agency without increasing staff, that's kind of amazing that we do. I know Rick does a great job, but it's not surprising that at this point in time, as the implementation moves forward, that we would make a move to strengthen that capability, because it's really a very time-consuming thing as we move forward. So I'm supportive. I look forward to seeing it appear in the budget process. And I know you don't take these things lightly, so a lot of thought has gone into it. So I appreciate that we're strengthening the agency in all of these areas. I think it will make us a better agency.
Thank you, President Martin. Director Marks?
I likewise support all the positions that are laid out here. I agree especially that the need for in-house modeling expertise is is critical. It makes a lot of sense financially, as well as just being able to presumably have a quicker turnaround, get information that oftentimes is critically needed in a timely manner. I guess question I have was asked to the second position, which is slated as a water resource specialist. If we could be really probably recruiting at the right level, or should we be recruiting at a senior level there also? If I'm just thinking of our standing with the regulatory community, do we want somebody maybe with a little more experience there or not? Let's throw that out for your consideration. I guess the only other question I have is, would the idea also be to, if we're creating this new family of specialists with our current nautilus position of water resource data scientists, would that job be transitioned into this new job family, or do you see two separate job families there?
Yeah, I think that one's a good question, Dirk. Probably too early to tell. I think, you know, as we're going to go through some kind of class development thing where we work on the classification, the job description, and kind of that family tree. So it's a good question. I don't think we were necessarily going to specifically address that, but we can definitely think about it.
Yeah. I would encourage you to do that.
I certainly agree with you in replacing Cheryl and the functions that she's taken on over the last couple of years, and we paid for that position many times over. That's done very well. And the senior water resources specialist, absolutely, Sigma has in the GSA has is going to take more and more of your time as it goes along in the future. You know, the water conservation specialist, I guess I'm not real sure there. Are the people that are in that group now, have they taken on some additional duties? Are they working overtime? How are we filling that gap now? Are they working Fridays and Saturdays? Or how is that being done now to get the work done?
Yeah, I don't know. Is Matt Dickens, are you on? Did you want to take it? I can do it if you'd like. But.
Yeah, sure. I'm on the call here. You guys can hear me okay?
Hey, Matt.
Yes, we can.
Yes, Director Cooper, thank you. Yes, our team has taken quite a bit of additional duties, particularly during the drought, to transition and transform and rebrand our program expression in order to comply with our stage one and then subsequently stage two water shortage contingency plan. In addition to that, we're finding that as the our conservation team are working on weekends, we are taking on more duties, and we're finding the need to engage further and further with the community far more time intensive than it traditionally has. I think a lot of us agree that the low-hanging fruit in the conservation world has been adequately, obtained in water efficiency, but that there's still quite a bit of opportunity. But those opportunities require both significant increase in time intensity and legwork, new engagement techniques, but then also with the long-term conservation framework, which I'll present on here shortly, you'll see that there are new components to the program that are far more robust than what they have been traditionally. And so I think that there is absolutely a need and that additional staff is merited.
You know, and I've never heard of a limited term duration position in public agencies. Once you're either hired on as a part-time employee or you're either hired on as a full-time employee, I've never heard of limited term. I don't know how you do that.
I hadn't heard of it either, but I realized that we were doing it and that, yes, we have a structure to be able to do it. So that has been vetted through the legal process and all those things. So it's basically a specified, you know, period of time that the person coming on knows that that's the arrangement that they're signing up for. And it's identified for that block of time. And that's why I think this program, you know, as we're developing a program, it fits well with that. So it's kind of somewhere between a consultant and somebody on staff, right?
Yeah.
And they're filling that type of space. And then, you know, ultimately, I think, as I expressed, that as we work through the strategic plan, and as Matt says, maybe we should have had his presentation first, but as you see his presentation of the new framework, I think it'll become clear kind of on the extra things that this agency is going to be able to need to do going forward.
Okay. Yeah, I think this one is going to maybe take a little more time in the budget process to identify exactly what you're doing now and what your plans will be in the future and what the duration of that position will be.
Thank you. Mr. Dickens, so the water conservation specialist, is there a problem with outreach, or is this position more of you need a data scientist to evaluate all you know, incoming data, you know, specifically the AMI data that's been available to your staff?
Thank you, Director O. That's a good question. I think that where we're at currently, our staffing levels were very much premised on the level of activity that we had, actually half the level of activity we had prior to the agency's merge. But to implement the previous strategic water use efficiency strategic plan. However, with the new conservation long-term framework, I think there are going to be needs for increased data analytic skills, increased statistical capabilities to dive further into ways to engage with customers in new and innovative ways that are premised on data, as opposed to a reactive or responsive kind of conservation program. So I think that you'll see in the conservation framework that we move from this 10-year kind of compliance period to annual compliance periods, as well as the development of a whole new set of very intensive commercial, industrial, institutional best practices that we'll need to comply with on a regular annual basis as well. So I think our team is, you know, our team as it's structured is, you know, they're doing phenomenal work in the since May of last year. The team has led and responded to customer requests and conservation requests to conserve nearly 10,000 acre feet of water. They're working nights, they're working weekends, they're doing everything they can to be responsive to the drought situation. But I do think that we're going to transform into, again, from this drought response to something that requires more energy and inertia on our part, as opposed to responsive to customer engagement in response to the drought, as well as in response to a 10-year framework. This is going to be an annual framework that's going to increase our reporting requirements, our engagement needs. And as we have to climb higher up the conservation tree to get additional savings, that's going to require more, again, innovative data-centric work in order to direct us in the right ways to engage with customers.
Thank you. And regarding the senior water resource specialist, just to piggyback on President Martin's comments, so with these two hires, hired with the senior water resource specialist, So there's a potential for us not using consultants and developing things in-house, the reports in-house. Would that person need to have some sort of certification, license, in order to produce those kind of reports? Just an example, you know, any engineering drawing needs to be stamped by a PE, that kind of a level of certification necessary to produce those kinds of reporting and on annual or semi-annual basis.
Mr. Chair, when I'm looking at some of the other comparative agencies and how they're recruiting for such like these positions, there was licensing is not a requirement most of the times in the other agencies. It's preferred if you have a license, especially if you are a registered geologist and there is no registered hydrogeologist in California, but usually there is a registered geologist. And many people they will try to get that license. And if we get someone with that license, that's really good. If we don't, most of the reports from hydrogeologists doesn't require a license.
Okay.
Doesn't require any stamping for that.
Just my quick concern here is when we use consultants, you know, bonded, insured, if they mess up, it's on them and they'll have to reimburse us in full or in half.
Yeah. I think the thing that Ali and I have been talking a lot about is kind of the role to start with is more of a building in-house knowledge and capacity, but somebody that's more focused on managing consultants, right? Right now, we're kind of running around putting out fires that way, rather than having somebody that can really strategize in the field of like groundwater modeling. There's a lot of strategy about how you lay out scenarios and things like that. And there's still this big engine and a big model sitting over there that you're going to run, but a lot of the work involves strategizing about how you want the model to analyze a question that you're asking. And we really see that this position being able to help us with that and then managing the consultant that's going to run that so it's efficient and we get the answer out. Because when it gets expensive is when you keep asking the question the wrong way and it doesn't give you, an answer that you can utilize in your planning. And so at least that's been kind of our experience lately and just getting focused in on that aspect of how you ask the model to run different scenarios.
Okay. And Director Marks, you're concerned with the title of that role. You think that title of the role will bring in individuals that might be less qualified? Or are you concerned with the title and the suggested salary range?
I was concerned about the second position that was more focused on the biology and coming in at a jury level, wondering if we ought to have somebody a little bit higher in the chain if we're going to be interacting on a tactical basis with the regulatory community. That's what my concern is.
Okay.
Understood. I think they are something different. What Steve was saying, that is our goal to have somebody who can run the groundwater flow model in-house, or is it somebody who can manage that or some combination of both?
In a perfect world, it would be both, Director Mark. So I think a lot of this is going to be how we frame the class and the quality of individuals that apply and we recruit, right? And so I think what we would target is somebody that has that kind of ability. I mean, we would love to have that ability in the house. So we don't really know until you go out to the market about, you know, who's going to apply and the skill set that they plan to do. But I think we're trying to target both.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Marks, I think in just in addition to what Steve mentioned, I think our plan is to bring them in, let them understand the model, understand the machine that we have right now. And while they are doing that, we'll start developing their knowledge through the management of this of the consultants that they are doing the work for us for now. But hopefully in the long run, they will be able to run scenarios for us internally. And the reason for that, I think, as you know, that running a scenario in the groundwater model is really an expensive endeavor. It's a really costly thing. So if we have so many questions and we have to quickly answer these questions, sending it to the consultant, having going through the procurement sometimes and just having a consultant doing it for us, it might not be beneficial in the long run. So hopefully in the long run, as Steve mentioned, that we wanted someone who can capture both skills, right? Being able to provide a good QA, QC for the consultants at the first, learning the system, and then later on, hopefully, we'll be able to develop them into being able to run the model for answering all the questions that we have from the GSA or from our agency and from other entities.
Okay. Any other comments, questions from directors?
No, I just would maybe follow up on something Steve said, which is really important. I think this in-house hydrogeology capability will allow us to focus on asking the right question and reducing the cycle of cost from our consultants. So I think I didn't think of that part of it, but I can see where that would really help. Yeah. And I actually would like to comment on the position that Matt is asking for. You know, it just seems to me we're placing more and more importance on quote unquote active conservation. Is that right, Matt? And, you know, that's a pretty important component of our water supply picture. And is this new position going to help us to improve our performance in conservation? Is that your hope? Is that
absolutely, Director Martin. That's absolutely our hope, is to be able to again kind of improve our capabilities of transitioning from responsive active conservation to proactive conservation that requires a significant amount of agency developed inertia that's tied to data analysis, water consumption analysis, predictive analytics, far more utilization of our AMI capabilities, customer service capabilities, and customer service system that we currently just we haven't been able to deploy for various reasons as the CIS system was merging. But now as these systems and tools come on board, we want to leverage those and have staff capabilities to leverage those to work smarter. But we do need to also have staff to be able to do that.
Okay, thank you. All right, with no further questions and comments, Mr. Cole, thank you for bringing this to our attention. And
you'll see it again.
Okay. Do we know when this will be presented to us?
Yeah, I know it'll start showing up in the budgeting process. So first at the finance committee and then ultimately the board in a couple of different sessions going forward.
Okay. All right.
We're easier than finance committee.
what's the market for
But again, all these notices are highly appreciated. Right, moving on to item number four, item 5.1, Devil's Den semi-annual report presented by Rick Vassilopoulos.
Thank you, Chair Osahosky. I'm really just here to answer any questions that you might have on the report. I can kind of hit the highlights real quick. On the first page, you may have noticed, we recently started putting in this table showing the depth of water that our associate goes out and measures pretty much every 3 months or so And you'll notice that the water depth somehow raised 8 feet in 6 months. We're not exactly sure that that's true. So Tim, our person out there, is going to start measuring it every month. If you look at any of the other months, the most that it's ever raised has been 4 feet in that same time period. Even though they got almost 6 inches of rain, actually six, seven, eight, almost 8 inches of rain between October 1st and when in February, we think that might be a little, there might be a problem with that. So we're going to keep an eye on it and see if that actually, it's good if it actually did raise up 8 feet, but we don't know that that's actually happening. And then some of the other things, the rancher out there is going to be putting some new cattle out there in the next month or so, I think. He pulled them early last year because his crops did not grow due to the no rain. So he didn't have anything to feed them. So he pulled them out early. But he thinks with the rain this year, he's going to be able to bring 300 or 400 cattle out there on his property relatively soon. And then the big thing out there is we're still waiting on our Thomas Carter yield and water quality reports. It was supposed to be to me today. He emailed me and said that it will be to me on Friday. So we'll have that finalized. That will go to Provost and Pritchard to add to their report, which I got the draft report from them yesterday. So we're hoping between that by the end of next week, we will have something that we can relate back to you. Ali had asked me to present to our executive committee at the end of the month, the findings that we have, and then we would come back, I guess, 2 weeks later to this committee to give a presentation on what we found. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Public attendance, stand any virtual attendance, questions, directors, comments, questions?
The groundwater quality report will be interesting.
It's not good.
Oh, no, I know it's not good. But it would be interesting. You know, we did a study on it many, many years ago. If we can find that old study that Kennedy Jenks did, it would be interesting to compare it with what we get now.
And we did.
You found the old study?
We have the, I think it was from 93. Yeah. So it is in these reports. That's one of the things why Harder took so long. He came back and he didn't have it equated equally between trying to compare it with the KJ report. He combined the entire watershed in one where it's actually split in two different parts.
Right.
So he split them apart. That's what's taking him so long to split the information back.
Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah.
So be able to compare each parameter.
Hopefully.
And then the draft that you see from Provost and Pritchard, so you see the draft, you can't really comment on it. In a month, you'll present it to the executive staff. So we should expect to get a copy in a month and a half.
When's the next? Yeah, we're gonna work through Matt Stone, general manager Matt Stone, whether we may want to look at some of the report as it relates to the cost estimates in current negotiations to understand whether that's something that we should be discussing in closed session or not. So we wanna work through that first, and then we'll have a schedule there on that.
Yeah, there are a couple of new things that popped up after the report that won't be part of the report that Matt Stone had brought up to me and Steve last week or earlier this week. So those will probably be in the presentations as well. Some other ideas that he had.
Okay.
Good.
But as far as the ideas on the use of this land, sky's the limit approach, meaning any possible idea will be presented to us, or
there are
a conservative approach?
Yeah, there are probably 8 different ideas or a combination of those 8, anywhere from solar to permanent farming to yearly farming to water sales to local to nearby farmers. to the sale of the property outright. All of those things got looked at by Corvallis and Pritchard, and that's kind of where we're at. But they're thinking that a combination of a certain, maybe two or three of those things are probably our best, right? In their report, at least, we'll say that it's their our best option to, you know, get revenue for the company.
Okay. All right.
Rich, oh, go ahead. Very much.
And last month from the Water Institute, it was site conversation with Paris Vaughn of our Irvine Ranch, who indicated some interest in the Devil's Den property, exploring how it might be better utilized as. He ended up with, or he kind of approached me with the opinion that we hadn't been doing anything with it, that it was just sitting there. I don't know if that translates into Irvine Ranch approaching staff or not, but just wanted to give you a heads up.
Thank you. Funny that they would have any interest. I mean, the groundwater there isn't any good. It's not that you can put water in there and get it back out. And I've been surprised that the farmer hasn't put in pistachios.
You can't. It's in the agreement. You can't put permanent crops in.
That was probably what everybody realized pistachios would be done with salt water.
that's one of the biggies that he can't do out there is to plant permanent crops.
I think water resorts be challenging to develop property, but and I don't know why. Pierce Vaughan seemed to be interested in, or if that was just a
Pierce Vaughan
comment.
One of the other concepts that is teed up is the potential look at a mitigation banking arrangement, so environmental mitigation banking. So we did try and look at a little bit of everything. Rick, if you can just share real quick about the farmer's request for water.
Oh, sure. Since ideally we thought that, and we may still have water that's going to spill, we were trying to figure out what we were going to do with it. And one of our things was to ask the farmer if he wanted some of the water delivered to Devil's Den. He doesn't think that he can take it in time, so then he requested water outside of the parameters, which would be Article 21 water probably at that point, or our Table A water if we had. We get a 70% allocation, it wouldn't be a problem. But he just emailed me today, right before the meeting, and said our cost was a little bit more than he says he can pump water out of the ground cheaper than we would sell it to him, even though the quality obviously would be much better if he took the state water. So we're kind of in negotiations, but it sounds like at this point, if we're not willing to basically give him really cheap water, not just the cheap water we were going to give him, we're not giving him really cheap water, he may not want it. It's kind of where we are right now. But we're waiting till the end of the month to see what our allocation is. And we'll probably make some decisions after that if we do get a giant allocation, maybe we'll rethink what we're telling.
Okay. Thanks for looking at all the options. All right, no other questions, comments? Let's move on to the next item. Item 5.2, status of water supplies, presented by Sarah.
I'm the most optimistic person.
She's really optimistic these days.
I'm not bad.
She's very busy. Maybe.
Sarah, I'm busy and I'm sick now, so.
Oh, no. We're sick this morning. No.
I was sick this morning. I just wasn't telling you I was sick. Okay, so I am going to do a very quick water supply update for you. Basically just going to go through a quick drought map, precip, San Luis Reservoir update, and then talk about our allocation and operations. This is just quickly kind of just giving you an idea of where we started the water year, 2023 water year, the entire...
Ms. Blair, can you hold on for a minute?
Yeah.
Seeing the images.
Yeah, could you share?
Oh, I'm not, because I'm not sharing it. It's because it's much easier for me to present when I'm not sharing, huh? Okay, I got to pick the right screen now. I think it's that one. Sorry. I have to go back then because you need to, can you see my screen yet?
Yes, you can see it now.
Okay. This is a snowman in Saugus. So, again, sorry about that. Good evening, everyone. I'm going to be doing a water supply update for you. This is my overview and you heard what I said. So just real quick. I wanted to start by just showing you where we started the water year. So on the left-hand side, you can see the drought map. It was better. You know, we didn't have, we made some progress in 2022 with regards to the drought recovery, but we still had 100% of drought. And then the map on the right-hand side is where we're at now. And you can see there's actually about 17% of the state actually has no drought classifications. And it's been a few, 3 years since that has been. So definitely a lot of improvement and especially improvement in the Central Valley and Central area where we had the most severe exceptional drought. So we've come a long way so far in a few months. This is a graphic that has some snowpack information. So the bottom left-hand one is showing us, you know, statewide snowpack levels, which you can see the purple line is much higher than the blue bell curve of our historical averages. So that's great. We are about 192% of normal to date and 181% of where we need to be on April 1st. So it's a huge amount of snow in the mountains right now. And then on the right-hand side, it breaks it up into those regional areas and kind of compares some of the different snowpacks we've had in the past. So kind of the same thing. You've got the blue bell curve, which shows the averages, and then they've got a bunch of different lines. And our line that we're following right now is the dark blue line that hasn't completed the entire year yet. So you can see up at the top, you've got the northern region, which is basically right in track with where we were at in 2019, which is a huge snow year. But then the central and the southern maps, the middle and the bottom map, are tracking with the 1982-1983 record snowpack that we've had. So this is pretty incredible. If we continue this trend, if we go higher. One thing to note, though, is that the northern area isn't following that same trend, and the northern Sierra is where all of our largest surface water reservoirs are located. So these winter storms have really helped with our snowpack and our reservoirs, but the groundwater basins are much slower to recover. So this is something to keep in mind. You know, the central, southern are doing great. And really, there's lots of snow everywhere. It's just the northern area where our big reservoirs really are hurting is not getting as much as the other areas. So, and then wanted to talk a little bit about precipitation locally. So I put both of the graphics that I kind of flip-flop back and forth with here. On the top left-hand corner, you've got kind of our monthly average in yellow. And then the amount of rain that we've been getting each month, it's been pretty incredible. Between the January storms and February storms that we just had like a week ago, there was about a month of no precipitation. And so the majority of that rain, well, all of that rain basically came from those storms we had right at the end of February. We got over 8 inches in a few days. And we've had just a tiny bit already in March, and there's more rain coming. We're probably going to be over that historical average for this year as well. And then on the right-hand side, you can see kind of where it's comparing our wettest year in 2004, 2005, and some of our other average and driest years. Remember, I've put the information in both of these graphics from basically up to March 8th today. And so I anticipate that that bottom graphic will continue going up after this weekend. So just kind of wanted to give you an idea of where we're at right now. And you've got the percentages there, much higher than our historical average. I think overall we've got like about 28 inches of rain already, and our average is 17. So it's pretty incredible, and still have quite a few months left. Potential storms on the horizon. what I've got here, the bottom area shows us those potential atmospheric rivers coming our way. And I've put an arrow through the middle there showing, you know, what part of the storm is lined up to hit our area. And so you can see there's a couple big cells coming through. It's going to bring some rain, I think, some tomorrow, and then a little bit more next week as well. I think this central and northern area are set to hit a bit harder. In the right-hand corner, you can see the six-day forecast for precipitation. And it says Los Angeles is anywhere from a half an inch to an inch, but Santa Clarita is also kind of close to Ventura. And I know they're saying 1.5 to 3 inches. So, you know, there's potential for a bit more as well. So San Luis Reservoir, I've got a graphic here that they shared with us last Friday, and DWR put out a reservoir, kind of a 10-day forecast to let us know where we, where and when and if we may fill DWR's portion of the reservoir. And then that's kind of where we start talking about spill, which isn't a physical spill, it's like a paper spill. And they just start reallocating our water. So just as a reminder again, when the San Luis Reservoir fills, what happens is any of the carryover or backed up water that other contractors have in that reservoir, if DWR can continue pumping water into that reservoir, they basically take our water, reallocate it to themselves because we're holding space that they could be using. And then they start offering up that Article 21 water. And so again, it's just a paper swap. So if they need 5 acre feet of space and we're taking it, we lose our 5 acre feet, they claim it, and then they keep pumping and send that 5 acre feet down as Article 21 water. So basically giving contractors the opportunity to do with it as they can immediately. So for contractors that have places to put water, it's really beneficial. We're not necessarily there yet. That's what the agreement with United would help us with, be able to kind of utilize some of that water supply. But basically where we're at right now, we're at about 944,000 acre feet in DWR space. The blue dot shows where DWR forecasted we would be at this time, and they're right on target as where we are. Got about 118,000 acre feet to get full in my estimate, based on the rate that they're filling, anywhere from 12 to 20 days before we fill. Currently at the beginning of March, Santa Clarita Valley or SCV Water has about 14,000 acre feet of water in there. And we're trying to find places to put that, and I'll get that into that a little bit more. And unfortunately, tomorrow is the next update, so we'll kind of get more information, and I don't have the most recent updates. But things are moving fast. So our allocation increased in February to 35%. We operationally, in February, we made a change in our local production, and we reduced some of our groundwater production for two reasons. One, because we wanted to use up as much Article 56 and backup water that we could to minimize our risk of spill. And then it also helps, because it's been so wet, it really helps induce groundwater aquifer recovery. And so we were able to do that quickly, and it definitely made an impact in February, even though we weren't able to I don't think, get the full benefit of it in February with some of the other challenges we were seeing. So hopefully as we continue to do that in March, we'll still be able to use more of that imported supply so we don't lose it. So that's one of our strategies. And then with regards to our other imported supplies, in February, we submitted all of our requests to our banking programs to make sure that we can recharge in 2023 and do it as quickly as possible if needed. And we're doing that to help try to avoid some Article 56 spill. So we have authorized evacuation of some of our Article 56 or carryover water from San Luis to our banking programs. So Semi-Tropic is actually taking about 40 to 50 acre feet a day right now for us. And that's the amount of capacity that we're allowed if everyone is competing, which they are right now. And then I just heard from Rosedale that they actually were told that all the current member agencies needed to evacuate their water from San Luis. So we kind of got bumped until all of those agencies fulfill those requirements. And so they think that they'll be able to start moving our water supplies, I think, by the 13th. So they're keeping me up to date. And at that point, we're thinking about 200 acre feet a day. Now, with all of the agencies evacuating water all at once, I'm hoping that means that it will take a little bit longer for San Luis to spill, which might give us more opportunity to evacuate water also. One other thing that we're looking into, and it's kind of just moving forward today, is that we're also looking at potentially doing some kind of an exchange with another agency to kind of take advantage of the rest of the water that we potentially could lose before a San Luis spills. And so I just got an email back from DWR contract section letting me know what the process is. They are approving exchange agreements through emails right now. They said it could take 1 to 2 days. So it's going really fast and they're really accommodating these exchanges because everybody's trying to take advantage of opportunities and not lose their water. So the updated contract amendment has basically allowed for this and it's pretty cool. So we're gonna do everything we can to do that as well. I just don't have a lot of details on that, but at this point, at this point in the past, we've lost a lot of water through spill situations. And the way I'm looking at it is we're learning, we are every acre foot that we get out of there without spilling, I think we're benefiting the agency. And in the end, we really, we're probably going to have my estimate is around potentially like 7,000 or 8,000 acre feet could spill if we can't get an exchange going, and we're trying to minimize that. And that's really nothing. In the past, I think the first year I was doing this, we spill like almost 40,000 to 50,000 acre feet. It was a lot. So we're nowhere near that amount of storage right now. If we do lose it, there's a really good probability that we are going to get a very large allocation. This 35% allocation is based on the 99% exceedance curve, which basically insinuates that the rest of the year is going to be the driest on record, which clearly it's not. So at a 50% exceedance curve, the DWR's modeling shows at least a 75% allocation. So there's a good chance we're going to have way more water to play with once they make this decision. And historically, I think the year that was similar to this was 2019. And we kind of had the same thing where we had a 35% allocation. San Luis started spilling. And in March, they bumped the allocation to 70%. So it seems like they're just being really conservative right now. And it will go up. We just have to be patient. It's kind of a bummer they haven't done that yet.
Sarah, when do you expect the next allocation?
I think it's going to happen sometime around our next operations meeting, which I believe is on the 24th. I can look. Okay. I can look at that and let you know. But it's towards the end of the month in March. They have to get all their forecasts. So they've already gone out and they've collected snowpack information. They need to update Bulletin 120, which is all of the river forecast information. And then they will be able to, well, let me see if I can find where you guys, did I stop sharing?
We can see your screen, your email. You want to stop sharing?
Okay. I don't know how to stop sharing. Oh, stop sharing right there. Sorry about that. Too many screens right now. I was going to look and see when that meeting was, but I towards the end of the month is probably going to come up. I know the contractors were pushing for it in February. They're not too happy because the sooner we know how much water we have, the sooner we can start making agreements to do things with it, you know? And basically for us, any allocation over 60%, at 60%, we can maximize and fill our banks, the 20,000 in Rosedale, 5,000 in Semi-Tropic, and we'll still have water to play with and meet all of our carryover goals for next year. So it's kind of where we're at.
Questions from public attendants? Directors, comments, questions?
Good news.
No more questions. They give us a 75% allocation. They can't even deliver that much water, I don't think, can they? Mechanically.
It depends. I don't know what the status of some of their pumping plants are.
Yeah.
They'd be kind of on the ragged edge, I think.
If we reach anything over 60%, how does that affect our stage one and stage two conservations?
Matt, did you hear that question?
I think they're waiting.
Did. Which Matt are we talking
Matt
about?
Dickens. That was Matt Dickens. That was a Matt Dickens question.
Okay, good. I'm going to make sure I wasn't in trouble. We're unloading the dishwasher here.
In other words, Matt Dickens, are you still with us?
I'm still here. I'm still with us. I'm very thankfully to be with us still. That's an interesting question that certainly the agency management will need to evaluate all the conditions. In addition to the water supply, we are still in emergency regulations where the State Water Board, I do not believe that its emergency resolution would expire until June. And that resolution requires that all agencies implement stage two of its, or all the measures of stage two of its water shortage contingency plan, as well as the banning of irrigation of non-functional turf with potable water. So that's not set to expire until June. So again, I think that we'll need to evaluate the final conditions. And then in addition to that, we are kind of transitioning from a drought year to a recovery year. And with 45%, you know, we still have exceptional rationale to implement our water conservation programs and compelled to implement those conservation programs as we need to recover, you know, 45% of our bank supplies were utilized during the last drought. And so replenishing those banks is ideal. And as we implement, so the more we conserve today, we can put more water into banks. In addition to that, the more long-term conservation measures are implemented, that will stretch out those bank supplies for future years. So in terms of how will it impact the stage one, stage two decision, that's to be determined. But I did want to just kind of outline those additional facts for the committee's privilege.
Thanks for that reminder. That's right. We're kind of obligated to be in stage two. So historically, so if this expires in June, and if it's going to continue, that requirement, you know, that order, will that be announced before the expiration or after the expiration? What's the usual history with that?
That's a really great question too. I know that there's a lot of motion right now at the state board level to start addressing the conservation long-term framework components, which I will provide an update here shortly. So it's possible that it could transition into more of the long-term conservation framework from the drought response. But I think we'll learn more as we start to approach that expiration date.
Okay. Thank you for jumping in, Mr. Jacobs. Ms. Fullery, just want to make one comment here. Thanks for the presentation. Thanks for listing all the sources in your presentation and for including that atmospheric river report from UCSD. Letting us
You're
know.
You're very welcome. I know you like that. So.
Yeah. Any other questions, comments from directors?
Mr. Chair, right. Just wanted to address a question that you asked about the ability to move if we have a 75. Last week in the operation and maintenance and engineering committee for the stakeholder contractors, the Department of Water Resources staff, they who are responsible for the operations, they mentioned that they have everything in place right now to move if the location increased to 50%, they have everything ready to move it. If it increased to 75%, they think that they are capable of moving it. Anything more than that, they have to tweak their operations. But that's one of the things that someone was asking, the same question you are asking, if our location goes up, can the DWR move water mechanically to everyone? And it seems like 75, they are comfortable answering, yes, we can move it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
At 75, that's good, because there was a long period there where they couldn't even move 75%. Yeah. They must have done some maintenance while we were at 5%.
All right, Ms. Fullery, thank you. We're going to move on to item 5.3, staff activities presented by Mr. Hassani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Directors, I would really first want to start by acknowledging the effort that Sarah and Najwa have been putting in the last couple of weeks. Just the dynamic of the system is really very changeable, and they have been keeping up with that. And actually, it's now the engagement through this process is going all the way to General Manager Stone, who is engaged now. Every week we have a meeting internally for Sarah, Najwa, myself, and Steve and Matt Stone to just looking into the dynamic of how things are changing, because it's really changing between 24 hours, you have really different decisions. And even we're keeping up with the state water contractors. They're having now weekly meetings for especially for St. Louis. And then and all the other agencies are having those. And I know that Sarah is keeping all of these channels of communication with our banking, with the DWR, and with all this. So I just wanted to acknowledge the effort that Sarah and Najwa are putting in this, and I really appreciate that. And I would like also to acknowledge Rick in the work for the Devil's Den, because it has been, and I have known this working with him over the last couple of months. It's have been a lot of back and forth with the consultants, and he keep bugging them and keep asking them to get the information from them. And I really appreciate the effort that they're doing. So my first item, and I have a very short report this time. My first item is just give you an update on the United releases. We had a meeting with them in February 21st. They came and visited us here to give us a status of the native flows release from Castaic Lake. And before they came here, they started the release on February 3rd, and they were releasing only 200 CFS. But when they came to us, they said the DWR told them at first that you have 25,000 acre feet that you need to start releasing. And so they started with the 200, but then DWR later on came and asked, we have more of the flow coming as a result of all the storms that Sarah talked about. They have about 35,000 acre feet that they need to release. And that's why they increased the release to 400 CFS. And so before they know that there is a big storm, they stop the release so that they can accumulate more water. So now I think now they're probably they're going to stop tomorrow or the day after because they know that Friday we're going to get a big storm. So they want to that to be stored. Then they will start releasing again. But recently it's mostly it's about 400 CFS. They offered to us and invited us to join them on a field trip to observe flow measurement process. As I mentioned, they are trying to get this Doppler so that no one go into the creek because the flow is really high at this point. And we are trying to put a team internally, including our communication staff, because they wanted to take some pictures and videos for these field trips to share with the board. And as a lot of this snow and also rain coming into the storage, they are continuing these release until the end of April. So that's their plan right now. They are planning to take as much as they can at this point. So that's the first item I just wanted to, and again, you know, we are trying, our staff at different levels, we are trying to build that relationship with them. And this is really in a good spirit of collaboration between the two agencies. My second item, and I think three of you directors have been in that, is the GSA meeting, which was 2 days ago on March 6th, Monday. As all of you know, just a reminder, it included two information items and one board action item. The information item is a report explaining the effort during the latter half of 2020 to initiate groundwater-dependent ecosystems mapping and evaluation of groundwater pumping impact. The QDEs has some normal drought stress in the August when the field work was completed, but no signs of undesirable results. I think one of the biggest outcomes of that meeting or that effort for the GDE mainly is we developed a process and we tested that process, yes, in three locations only. But I think we find out now that the process that we developed, the protocol for the mapping and all of that, it's working. And so hopefully in the next year, and we are planning to do that, it's going to continue to include all of the locations that's identified in the GSA to be included. So I think I just wanted to make sure that the big takeaway for us is we develop the monitoring protocol and a system, and now we test it in the field and it's working. So that's a really good outcome for us as we are building on using this and practicing it into more of those locations. The other item, it was presented by Assistant General Manager Cole, providing an update on Bouquet Canyon Reservoir and efforts to provide support to the county's long-term planning and restoration effort. For the action item, the board adopted the 2022 GSB Groundwater Sustainability Plan annual report, which is the second report that's produced, and that will be submitted to the Department of Water Resources at a later date. That report indicated that the effort that's in the basin and the GSA is leading have put the basin to meet all of the basin metrics that sit in the GSB. With that, I would like to ask a question to the directors who have been members of the GSA, if you have any comments or any directions from that presentation to us staff so that we can improve upon the work that we have presented to you and take it back, bring it back again to the GSA.
Before we do that, does that complete your report or do you have additional?
That's questions? Completing my report.
Any questions from the public in attendance? Any virtual questions? Directors? Comments on the GSA meeting?
A related question. Has recalibration of the groundwater flow model been completed at this time?
It's almost there. We are in the final. Probably in the next GSA meeting, we are planning to present the results of the recalibration to the board.
Thank you.
Can you expand on that? The recalibration efforts.
There was some new information that's presented to the modelers regarding the LiDAR, I think, surface topography information that was different from the previous information that used in developing the model originally. With the new information used, they tried to recalibrate the model so that it can depict better the real-life situations. And this is especially in the alluvial aquifer as well as around the riverbed. And so this information became available after the development of the GSP and the model for the GSP. That's why there was an effort for recalibrating the groundwater model. Take into consideration this actually ground, it's information that's collected from the field. And that's why it's improving the ability of the model to produce better results.
It has nothing to do with the condensation metrics used by the satellite imagery, right? Okay. Yeah. Understood. Okay, specific question regarding GSA. Director Cooper, President Martin, any comments regarding what you've heard during the GSA
meeting? No, I kind of agree with Ali's assessment of what we heard at that meeting. I think it's all going in the right direction. As we go along, we'll know more and we'll be able to do more. Right now, all the indicators are nothing unacceptable. Well, that's a plus.
Second-year plan, or the second-year report was excellent. I really enjoyed the report, going through it, and some of the charts and graphs in there were really good. Since we lost the temperature probes in the river, the data that those were going to give us, which was going to show kind of what that, are we going to go back in and put probes back in, or what are we going to do with it? I wouldn't do it until after March, but.
Yeah, I think we're gonna evaluate kind of best practice on how to do it. I don't think we want to be in a position where, you know, if there's a big storm, they get wiped out every time. Yeah. But there's other ways to do it. I mean, the sand district literally throws probes attached to the brick.
Oh, really?
Into the flow channel. Right. So that'll get you surface flow.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that we're really trying to look at is kind of that interface of surface and groundwater. And so that it's just going to be a challenge because the river is dynamic. And it is not very merciful on equipment that you put in the way. But I think you're going to see us still. We think that's important data. So I think we're going to want to try and get more of it. We'll learn a little bit where we put them and how we put them and see if we can adjust.
I think one comment made during the presentation was the non-existent feedback from DWR. So aside from report received, did we get any
No.
So the really focus is on Central Valley. Dealing with this.
Yeah. If you follow the news, that they're coming out. I think Fresno just had theirs approved today, and then they had announced earlier that six of them were not approved. So, yeah, I think they're focused on the critically overdrafted basins.
And one of them that was not approved was Rosedale Rio Bravo.
And semi-tropic.
And semi-tropic, that's right, and semi-tropic, two of our groundwater banking partners.
Do you know the details why? Some comments?
The main thread from talking to our partners out there is they set minimum thresholds differently and they're in the same basin. Very adjacent, but I think it's the same basin. So you have one GSA saying we can go down this far, another GSA saying we can go down this far. And the state's like, no, we got to coordinate how that works and what the right level is. So I think that's mainly the objection that they're looking at and just setting of those thresholds.
Okay. Great. Any other comments, questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Al-Hassan. Now we move on to item 6.1, presentation of conservation long-term framework. with regards to AB 1668 and SB 606 presented by Matt Dickens. Mr. Dickens, go ahead.
Okay, can you guys see my screen okay?
Yes, we can.
All right, fantastic. Thank you, Chair O and members of the committee. I'm Matt Dickens, Sustainability Manager, and I will be talking tonight on the Conservation Long-Term Framework, which was prescribed by California state legislation, AB 1668 and SB 606, and later updated by additional legislation, which I'll share here. Tonight's presentation will cover about AB 1668 and SB 606, which I'll probably call the long-term framework going forward. Updated framework methodologies. We'll look at current conservation and water use efficiency strategies, our planned transition activities that we are currently working on and have documented and preparing for, as well as, and then we'll conclude with questions or comments. All right, so real quick about ABC, about the conservation long-term framework. It was designed to pick up and follow up the SBX 7-7 20% reduction in gallon per capita a day by 2020, which sunset in December 31st of 2020. So it was approved in 2018. It establishes water use objectives and long-term standards for efficient water use. It also provides incentives for water suppliers to use developed recycled water. It includes the urban water use objectives. When those urban water use objectives are essentially to be calculated on an annual basis and then compared to our production. And those urban water use objectives are basically aggregate residential indoor use, aggregate residential outdoor use, aggregate CII outdoor use or dedicated irrigation metered use, plus our aggregate water loss, which will be established as a performance standard. And then we get some variances depending on some very specific attributes to our service area. And then there are bonus incentives up to 15% of potable reuse water that we can apply for as well. So we have to meet these urban water use objectives, calculate them, and then not exceed them in terms of annual water consumption. The framework also identifies performance measures for commercial, industrial, institutional water users that are not an urban water use objective, but rather a series of performance measures. It requires ag water users to expand ag water management plans, and then annual water use reports are due by November 1st, 2023, and annually thereafter. So we are expecting to submit our first report this November. This is a major task for urban retail water suppliers. Some of these activities have already been accomplished, items 1, 2, and 3. That is updating and adopting the Urban Water Management Plan, which we did in 2021, prepare and adopt the Water Shortage Contingency Plan and DRA as part of the Urban Water Management Plan, which we did in the same period, as well as prepare and submit to DWR Annual Water Shortage Assessment Reports, which we are doing. The items that are next on the agenda are submitting the annual report to DWR on the urban water use objectives, actual urban water use, implementation of CII water use performance measures, and progress towards our urban water use objectives. Again, that starts November of this year, and then is annually thereafter. And then we have to adopt and submit to DWR a supplement to the adopted 2020 Urban Water Management Plan on implementation of the demand management measures to achieve their urban water use objectives. So we'll have to open up the already adopted 2020 Urban Water Management Plan and provide an addendum there or supplement based off of this guideline. Wholesale water suppliers, they're required to do similar activities. And, you know, some of these might be required on our behalf. That's to be determined through the methodologies. But that, of course, includes the similar things, adopting the Urban Water Management Plan, submitting DWR, preparing a Water Shortage Contingency Plan, submitting that to as part of the Urban Water Management Plan, and then prepare and submit to DWR Annual Water Shortage Assessment Reports, which we do. So we have a little bit of overlap, but we're in compliance with these components, and we're in compliance with the first three that I mentioned on the previous slide. So this is a time frame, real quick overview of kind of where we are and all the different kind of milestones. The legislation was adopted in 2018, And then the state put together various different stakeholder advisory groups, of which SCV Water and myself and Dirk and other folks at the agency were members of. And in 2020, the state was provided guidance on the drought plans. In January of 2021, they provided data on the irrigable lands. Now, it's important to understand what exactly was provided to us. The state ended up providing us with residential landscape area measurements, but they did not provide any information or support on the commercial dedicated irrigation metered areas. So those are things that we'll be required to do on our own. And having run water budgets in several communities in several states, I can tell you there's a good reason why they didn't do that, and that's because they're incredibly hard to do. Whereas residential landscape area measurements are far more easier and cookie cutter and can be established through aerial mapping as well as a LIDAR and near infrared imaging, whereas a dedicated irrigation meter is much more difficult to determine where it begins and where it ends. So here we are. It says the start of water use efficiency framework, and what our interpretation of this is that in November, we're going to provide our first report based off of water usage from the previous fiscal year or the previous calendar year. So we'll determine those, and those methodologies are still being finalized. So in 2023, we have for 2022, 2025, initially indoor water usage is based off 55 gallons per person per day. Here we have November 2023 reports beginning. In 2025 to 2030, residential water usage will be decreased to 47 gallons per person per day. And then anything after 2030 will be reduced to 42 gallons per person per day. So this shows kind of an outline and a timeline of where we're at and what the components to the framework we're currently experiencing, what to look for in the future. So this table identifies the various different items. We have residential indoor gallon per capita day, residential irrigation, which is the state provides an evapotranspiration adjustment factor for that and CII dedicated irrigation. The water loss target in the legislation was to be determined. Bonus recycled water usage, you can see what the criteria were, and CII performance measures will be determined. So what this is really showing is when the legislation came out, but the legislation prescribed indoor residential gallon per capita day, although it did provide a mechanism for the state to circle back to that and develop different benchmarks based off of research and analysis, in which case it did. And so in SB 1157, which was passed in 2022, you can see that they kept the 55 gallons per person per day up to 2025, but reduced it to 47 gallons down from 52.5, and then after 2030, reduced further from 50 gallons per capita day to 42. So those are things that are prescribed as well in legislation and codified. In terms of DWR's recommendations for these components, what I put here is the metrics. And what you can see is that they are fairly prescriptive in their ET adjustment factors. What does that really mean? Well, all plants are, their water usage is measured and their water need is measured by evapotranspiration. Typically, that's a reference crop. Can be alfalfa, which is historically in the ag community. For residential or urban centers, it might be cool season grass. It's kind of looking at what is the most water-intensive crop out there, and that's your reference crop. And then they're saying, okay, here's your ET adjustment factor, 80% of that or 63% of that or 55% of that. And so what it says for residential, existing residential, anything built by 2023 is 0.8 ET adjustment factor and reduced to 6.63 in 2030 and there and going forward. Anything new construction is going to have a ET adjustment factor of 0.55. So greatly taking advantage of those landscape palette improvements as well as efficiency improvements in new development and more aligns with the model water efficient landscape ordinance. And you can see it's very similar for commercial, except new commercial has an ET adjustment factor of 45. So you can think of that as 45% of the reference crop of cool season grass. For CII performance measures, They did come up with some recommendations, including classification systems, DIM conversion requirements, ILU technologies, and additional best management practices, which I'll outline in more addition here, further here shortly. I'll do it right now. So in terms of the developing new CII classification system, historically, the agency and water agencies classify their customers in kind of five or six different categories. You've got single family, multifamily apartments, or multifamily master metered. Then you've got commercial, industrial, institutional, dedicated irrigation, and other. Those are kind of the seven key. And then we also track recycled water. Those are the seven different customer classifications. For the CII piece, we're going to have to further identify all of our customers by classification system in these 19 categories. Water recreation, recreation non-water, food, beverage, you can see the list here, but it's 19 classifications. And the reason for this is that they want to start comparing and developing better analytics for benchmarking and baseline analysis for specific types of commercial usage. So by getting more granular on these 19 classifications, we should have a better idea of understanding and comparing to like type facilities, as opposed to saying one commercial, a car dealership, and a small restaurant would have, you can't really compare their usage in any meaningful way. And this will help us develop better analytics. In addition to that, we have commercial, industrial, institutional best management practices. Those include things like outreach, new incentives, landscape and irrigation management practices and training, operational practice updates, collaboration, coordination. There's a conversion threshold performance measure that essentially will require us to work with customers who have mixed use meters. These are good things to remember. You've got DIM and you've got MUM. DIMs are dedicated irrigation meters and MUMs are mixed use meters. That's a meter that has both indoor and outdoor. And then you've got DOMs, which are domestic meters. That would be just for the indoor. So DOMs, MUMs, and DIMs, important things to remember. And then we have in-lieu technologies for performance measures. So in essence, they're saying if the prescribed performance measure is not cost-effective, we have some alternatives that provide similar or near similar functions that we can work with customers to implement. And then we'll also have to look at annual reporting. So this is a huge undertaking and with a lot of details and is essentially developing an entirely new framework. Both of them developing a new framework, but the commercial side is certainly going to be very, very complex and require a lot of legwork, a lot of engagement, and a lot of customer interaction, as well as the other components. So activities in progress. We are working right now for the CII dedicated irrigation meter landscape efforts. That's to be determined by the urban water suppliers. For our agency, we do have those numbers fairly accurate. I'd say 80 to 90% accurate for our legacy Valencia division, but we're kind of flying blind right now with our Santa Clarita and Newhall legacy division. So quite a bit of work to do there. We have approval of variance types and standards. This is the activity that the state is taking. So they're going to look at things like, do you have seasonal populations? Do you use swamp coolers? Do you have a lot of horses? You know, what are the types of variances that we need to take into account to make sure that you're not, that we're not putting tightening the screw too much on your specific types of water usage when comparing your usage to your urban water use objective. They are in the process of finalizing the approval of the efficient water loss standard. That's on different fronts, but it will be both in the urban water use objective, but also later the state water resource control board is to devise a cost-effective approach to water loss targets. So more to be determined there. And then there's implementation. All right, so now we'll turn to current conservation and water use efficiency strategies here at the agency. Again, we had SBX 7-7, 20% reduction in gallons per capita day by 2020, of which we exceeded it by 24%. So we were 24% instead of 20. We had the 2016 Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan, which was adaptive approach for cost-effective alternatives. We had the 2018 to 2022 Interim Conservation Strategy, which is essentially a continuation of 2% reduction in gallon per capita day per year. So that would be 23% reduction by 2021, 24% reduction by 2022. both of which we met internally. Even though those weren't mandated, all that conservation we accomplished will certainly help us get closer to our urban water use objectives in the future. We had the 2021 water shortage contingency plan, and we have updated the water use efficiency strategic plan following finalization of the conservation long-term framework. We did not want to put the cart before the horse here and develop a intensive water conservation strategy or sustainable water use strategy that was did not incorporate the requirements and the mandates that were being put into place by the state. So this is this chart here kind of shows us the performance. This is a really great chart that shows our water usage from 1995 through 2022. The black dashed line is our actual production over that 17-year period. The blue bars and the green bars essentially are showing us specifically our baseline, or what was called our GPCD baseline. And as you can see, what happens in 2010 to 2020 is that the blue bar goes up. That's essentially saying that that's what our usage would have looked like had the population at that year used 272 gallons per person per day. The green bar shows us our 2% reduction over time. So you can see that we were below, our actual production was well below that over that entire compliance period. And then we have 2021 and 2022, which we were still at or below those 22% or 22% reduction target and 24%. And then we also have population, which is this dotted red line. And that shows kind of we're here right around 300,000 people, but our water usage is the same level it was when we were down to about 200,000 people. So that shows great efficiency gains and success of water conservation over the long term, that our population has grown, but our water use efficiency and our actual production has decreased. And so you can kind of see what some of those big dents were of that usage. You have the recession dent, then you have the last drought. Then we kind of come back in. We had a wet year in 2019. We saw some rebound, and then we saw drought activities in 2022. So you can kind of see how our efforts and how different economic issues or different variables impact production. But the story here is that we have definitely changed our trajectory and our trends and our demands, and we're achieving significant water conservation successes. But we'll have more work to do. Okay, so plan transition activities. Here we are. We're March 2023. We're getting ready for our issuing our annual reports. What do we want to do here? We want to update the WaterSmart targets and integrate with our customer information system. I mentioned this before. We do have a WaterSmart target system for some legacy divisions. We're expanding that to all legacy divisions for residential. We're also going to extend that to dedicated irrigation meter. And then with that, we want to incorporate the conservation long-term framework methodologies and standards into the methodologies of that system, so that when we're communicating water efficiency targets out to our community, that they are not beyond range of what the state's requirements are, that they are in line with what we're being asked to meet in terms of our mandates. So that process is currently underway, and we expect that residential customers, all residential customers, single-family residential customers, will be online by April or May of this year. In 2022, next fiscal year, we plan to update the Water Use Efficiency Strategic Plan. We want to develop and implement CII BMP performance programs, develop and implement AMI capabilities, including conservation management and customer engagement portals, and then research additional conservation measures and provide findings for consideration. Last thing I would say is that we're still waiting for the finalization of the methodologies from the state. And at this time, we expect to hear the state board is expected to hear public comments and release those methodologies March 22nd of this year. So we're still learning, but we are gearing up and preparing to meet this challenge. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or comments that the committee might have.
Thank you, Mr. Dickens. Any questions from public in attendance? Any questions from virtually? Directors, comments, questions?
Quite a report. I mean, Matt's got an awful lot on his plate, and his whole team's got a lot on his plate, and all these requirements as we move forward are a heavy burden placed on the agency to not only achieve, but to monitor and measure. And
I couldn't agree with President Martin. Mr. Jenkins, can you go back on slide number 9? The performance measures, where you have now developed 19 categories. What sort of tool do you plan to use to capture all that data, store it, and edit it as needed? Circumstances change for businesses.
Director O, that's a great question. We can utilize for existing customer base. So if we take what we have today, we're going to have to do a lot of research to capture that and note that in our customer information system. And that's going to be by utilizing available public information, by doing site visits to all of these customers to determine what their function is. We might be able to cross-reference that with various different types of publicly available data, as well as NAICS codes, which is the North American Industrial Classification System, and grab some more data to roll it up. But we're going to have to work with our customer care division to not only be able to track these in the system and then report out on those, but then we're going to have to develop a system for when new customers come online that we're capturing that data as we have move-ins and move-outs or new customers altogether.
This is a daunting task. It is.
On
its own, it's going to be a daunting task. And you're saying you're going to capture that data and use the tool that we have right now, like where we monitor, customer data and usage, or is there going to be another tool that the agency will need to purchase?
I don't envision that we need to purchase another tool per se to house this data. The customer information database or the customer information system probably has space and locations that we can use to store that data and document that data for future use. But we're going to have to work with customer care as well as the software, the Inquesta folks, to be able to have a process that tries to streamline this and automate this as going forward. There's first identifying existing classes, documenting them, which is a daunting task. Then there's the maintenance. And so all three of those things are things that we're going to have to put together as part of this program and this requirement.
And then regarding SB 1157, the requirements from 2025 to 2030, it's my own personal belief that communicating this to our residents will be very vital and very important, because there's going to be a misconception between outdoor use and indoor use. And I certainly do not want the public to think that indoor use should be restricted versus outdoor use, because that could cause some public health concerns, which are alarming to me. How do we hope to communicate those specific GPCDs for 2025 to 2030, and then 2030 moving forward?
That's a really great question, Director O. And it's important, stepping back from this, that while these methodologies and these metrics we need to use to calculate our urban water use objective, the state has provided us flexibility on how we actually get the water savings to match the objective. So there's one piece, which is calculating the objective, and then there's meeting the objective. So in that case, it's not as though a customer will be required to use 42 gallons per capita per day. There's many reasons why customers may not be able to do that, whether there's healthcare issues or otherwise. However, we'll have to communicate that standard in developing our methodologies and engagement and communication, but it may behoove us as a strategy to focus more on the very significant inefficiencies in irrigation and irrigation transformation, where we would get more savings without having to dive so far into the indoor water usage. Although we still need to promote water use efficiency indoors, that particular standard, like I'm saying, is not necessarily one that is going to be mandated to each customer. It's more to determine the urban water use objective, and then we have to figure out strategies to meet it.
Okay. So it's my understanding that if we meet our target as a whole and we have some that are unable to meet it, no resident gets penalized because as a whole, we met our objective. Or is that incorrect?
That sounds, if I'm understanding you correctly, that if we met our objective by various strategies, and there were some customers who perhaps were not able to meet the standard for whatever reasons, are we going to be fined by the state in any when punitive measures are implemented? No, we would not. We would not be fined by the state if we were our water usage was at or below our urban water use objective.
Okay, thank you,
Matt, is there any indication from the state as to what those lines of relevancy in terms of character the state's being incentives and fines, if there are any incentives that we see being considered and conversely we just do we know what the fines or the costs associated with non-compliance might be?
Director March, I appreciate the question. As far as I'm aware, there's historical precedence on the process of the state taking action to issue conservation orders, information orders, and then escalating up to potential fines of $10,000 per day. But those are specific to the drought. I will ask and do further research to determine what those measures are that are either prescribed in the statute or if they're something that is to be determined.
Thank you.
Yep.
Director Cooper.
You know, I really like the one chart that you had, Matt, the one that showed the population increase and where we are now in water use. I think that one really dramatically shows the effectiveness of our programs and what you've been doing. I thought that was a very good one, very simple one, rather than the big bubbles and stuff that we do.
I like the bubble chart.
I know you do. That was excellent. I appreciate the report.
Thank you, Director Cooper.
Yeah, again, thanks for the report. I think we now have a better understanding of why you would need more personnel moving forward. Okay, any other questions, comments from directors? Just one more question. I know I've asked this before, Mr. Cole. Who's in charge of our AMI program in terms of piping data and customer interface? Is that Mr. Perez or is that someone else?
Matt might know the better answer to this than I do, Matt Dickens, but I'm in charge of the actual, say it one more time.
Okay. We are getting the meters, that's true. We're collecting the data and they're going to a warehouse, probably cloud or whatever. Who is in charge of purchasing a software that can analyze the data and provide it to Mr. Dickens and Mr. Al-Hassan?
So that's been a team approach right now. Part of it is captured in what Matt discussed is the water efficiency targets. So that's a software system that sets up a budget. And so it that piece is connected to the CIS system. And so every month right now, the idea is that that thing dumps over and you get, a calculation that happens over here. And then that thing communicates back the budget and can show on a bill like it has for certain areas of the community for a long time. So that is part of it, but the AMI component, the ability to make
more often communications is something that there's a team approach on. So I can get you more information on like who is the person, but I would say right now,
Steve, I might be able to help with that. You're absolutely right. It is a team approach. And, you know, operations is managing the hardware. The IT folks are managing telemetric capabilities. Customer care is managing the customer portal. And then conservation is working to develop the and communications on how to communicate and engage with the public on that data.
Yeah. So I would say the person in charge of that one is probably the general manager. It's so broad ranging that, you know, and I think the team approach is working really well. It's the key department areas that are all touching this, and it's not just
multiple stakeholders.
It wouldn't be fair to say, oh, it's a customer service responsibility because they're not controlling how the thing actually gets installed and moves forward. So we've got everybody in the room talking about it and trying to move this forward.
Yep.
Okay. He's probably going to come back and say, no, it's the assistant general.
And that would be fair. It's always the general manager.
When do we see the ability for the individual customer to be able to real time see what their meter use has been? How far away are we from that doing that?
That's a good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. I think, you know, part of the challenge is even with AMI, the frequency at which you ping it
right
has impacts to battery capacity, right? Because it wakes itself up when you do that. And so it's using the battery more than it otherwise would. And so there's a happy medium there, I think, that can be reached. I think part of the thing is that a lot of these systems now have kind of customer end units. And Matt, I don't know if you can speak to that a little bit, but there are technologies in the home that can access the meter itself, correct?
There are technologies that can access certain flows. They don't work really well with, like the Flume stuff doesn't work very well with our mag meters, but there are other devices that you can install in your home that gives you a whole different unique proprietary kind of access to your usage. But I think that's what the AMI's goal is, to take be that point for our customers where they can all access that. I think the answer to that is first you got to get all the meters in. And then you've got to get the customer portal built. Then you have to have a dashboard built, and then customers start coming in. So there's some legwork that needs to be done, from here to that point when all customers can access that. But I think that's our goal, right? That our goal is to get that as soon as possible, because that type of data has huge opportunity for conservation, but also awareness of usage and fixing leaks, and just a lot of great opportunities there. So, but still some work to be done.
It does. And when you can give people a goal and they can see their progress towards that goal in real time, they can meet those goals. So yeah, I think that's an important part of the AMI process, but yeah, we've still got 3 years worth of AMI installations to make out there.
What's the frequency between each ping?
Well, it's something that we can establish.
Just
so it's a function of software.
I mean, we're talking about 5 minutes, 1 hour, 1 day.
Matt, as far as the data collecting itself, how do you know the frequency on the actual data that the meter is tracking?
Yeah, the standard smart practice I've seen is hourly.
Okay. Okay.
But that doesn't mean that's what ours is doing right now.
No. I think I'm getting reports that show hourly. I haven't seen increments less than that.
So we are doing that hourly.
Yeah, that's the kind of standard for smart meters. It reports hourly.
But there's the question of, like, if you go ask the meter... It's collecting the data hourly.
But there's a whole function of how often you have to give me that hourly data.
Got it.
And that's the piece that can get into the battery life.
That makes sense. Okay. All right, understood. Thank you, Mr. Cohen.
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Dickens. All right, with no other questions, let's move on to item 7, committee plan calendar. Mr. Cohen.
Yeah, the calendar is there for the committee's purview, as it usually is. So, you know, we're trying to get Ali on board to really focus in on that calendar and get some things mapped out. So we'll continue to add some things. I kind of like the approach that the engineering group's taking, where they, you know, periodically mix in a little extra presentation on whatever it is, the flavor of the month, mm-hmm. when we've got time. So I think this is trying to incorporate some of those.
I appreciate that. Questions from other than attendance now? Virtual questions? Questions, comments from directors? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cole. And we'll do item 8, adjournment, meeting adjourned. Thank you, staff and directors.